Virtualization is here. It's a technology that's firmly entrenched in many diverse data centers. The appeal of virtualization is easy enough to understand. It vastly improves the utilization of data center hardware, in turn reducing the capital cost of new hardware while also reducing power and cooling needs. But virtualization and consolidation still have a long way to go, and data center owners need to know how to make the most of this valuable technology. In this podcast, you'll learn more about the trends and issues in server consolidation for 2012. Hello, I'm Stephen Bigelow, Senior Technology Editor, and I'm speaking with Bill Clayman, Virtualization Architect with MTM Technologies Incorporated. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Bill, how will server virtualization revolutionize consolidation efforts in 2012?
One of the most important business-related actions on the minds of corporate executives is going to be growth. To add to that, the mindset will be this. We want to grow, but how can our IT infrastructure help support this initiative? Server virtualization has really taken the standard data center and has created an agile environment capable of rapid growth and expansion. The true revolution of 2012 will be the marriage of server virtualization with the now widely adopted cloud technologies. Administrators will now create expansive distributed environments which are able to provision and deprovision resources as needed. By using consolidated hardware like Cisco UCS or HP Blade environments, many infrastructures are able to diversify their data offering. Even smaller organizations are capable of rapid growth, largely because of greater capabilities stemming from advanced data center and WAN technologies. Organizations looking to consolidate and expand are able to take their environment or part of it and place it into the cloud. From there, they're able to replicate entire workloads over the WAN to a safe remote site and continue their operations. Whether it's DR, testing and development, or just remote data center hosting, the ability to deliver fast, scalable solutions via distributed but still much consolidated controlled environment is truly becoming a reality for many organizations. Data center consolidation has evolved with the current technology present. Cloud environments allow administrators to remove older workloads and utilize agile remote servers to deliver their data efficiently to any endpoint. Effectively, we're able to do much more with more data. However, this is all still being hosted on fewer, much more powerful hardware components. We're not just talking about servers either. Data center consolidation revolves around data and resource-aware technologies capable of managing large amounts of information efficiently. This means SAN environments have more powerful data-to-duplication capabilities, or virtual infrastructures are able to manage widely distributed resources more efficiently. This is where the consolidation revolution occurs, Steve, with the unification of major data center components and their harmonious interaction with the cloud.
And so, Bill, what are the differences between unified communication and unified computing? I mean, we hear those terms used commonly today. When would a data center adopt either of those technologies?
It's important to know the difference in these technologies, especially since they play such an important role in modern data centers. Remember, unified anything means the collection of technologies made to work together to bring a more efficient solution to the end user. To clarify the differences, we need to understand the distinct definitions of both technologies. Unified communications refers to both real-time and non-real-time delivery of communications based on the preferred method and location of the recipient. Unlike unified messaging systems, which collect messages from several sources such as email, voicemail, or faxes, but holds those messages only for retrieval at a later time. On the other hand, unified communications allows for an individual to check and retrieve their email or voicemail from any communication device at any time. It effectively expands beyond voicemail services to data communications and video services. Presence, or knowing where intended recipients are and if they are available in real time, is probably one of the most key components of unified communications. Unified communications integrates all systems a user might already use and helps those systems work together in real time. For example, unified communications technologies could allow a user to seamlessly collaborate with another person on a project even if the two users are in separate locations. The user could quickly locate the necessary person by accessing an interactive directory, engage in a text messaging session, and then escalate the session into a voice or even a video call. The examples in the previous statement primarily describe personal productivity enhancements that tend to benefit the individual user. While such benefits can be important, enterprises are finding that they can achieve even greater impact by using unified communications capabilities to transform business processes. This is achieved by integrating UC functionality directly into the business applications using development tools provided by many of the suppliers. Instead of individual users invoking UC functionality to, let's say, find an appropriate resource, the workflow or process application automatically identifies the resource at the point in business activity where one is needed. Now, to clarify this even further, we need to take a look at what unified computing is. So a unified computing system is a data center architecture that integrates computing, networking, and storage resources to increase efficiency and enable centralized management. When UCS is delivered as a product, hardware and software are designed or configured to work together effectively. A really good example of this is the Cisco Unified Computing System. This is an x86 architecture data center platform composed of computing hardware, virtualization support, switching fabric, and even management software. The idea behind the system is to reduce the total cost of ownership and improve scalability by integrating different components into a cohesive platform that can then be managed as a single unit. Just-in-time deployment of resources and one-to-end redundancy are also possible with this type of system. Any organization looking to consolidate their environment and reduce their hardware, networking, and resource-heavy footprint should look at both unified communications technologies as well as unified computing. Where one can help redesign a business's communications workflow, the other is able to create a more robust data center environment capable of growth and easier manageability. Both technologies look to unify core business practices within the data center and make the entire infrastructure more agile.
And Bill, that's certainly interesting, and the promise of unified computing is a compelling one, but we've experienced some concerns about vendor lock-in. And how can adopters avoid vendor lock-in and sourcing problems if something should happen to the vendor?
This has always been an issue when it comes to unified computing and even unified communications. The truth here is that once you purchase a Cisco chassis, you're going to stick with Cisco blades. Similarly, if you're going to go with HP chassis, you're going to be sticking with HP blades. However, an intelligent infrastructure is a flexible one. This means even with unified computing, it's important to look at device and software interoperability. An environment can go with one type of unified computing system, but still have different vendors at the core networking infrastructure. In these cases, it's very important to know how your environment will work with different devices in the data center. With careful planning, it's very possible to have a robust, diverse environment where a few vendors are working together to deliver a powerful solution. The most important element when designing a unified computing infrastructure is going to be the planning process. It'll be in the company's best interest to choose vendors with good reputations and good standing, especially if a large portion of that environment will be dedicated to core production systems.
And Bill, of course, we have to talk a little bit about the cloud. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in it. We know the cloud is still coming. There's no question about it. Now, how should organizations choose between public, private, and hybrid cloud options in 2012?
The answer lies in the project or operational initiative. There are core reasons for going with one type or multiple types of cloud deployments. A small organization looking to expand rapidly but does not want to invest heavily in data center infrastructure will want to look at a public cloud option. A public cloud is owned and operated by a third-party service provider. Customer benefits from economies of scale because infrastructure costs are spread across all users, thus allowing each individual client to operate on a low-cost, pay-as-you-go model. Another advantage of public cloud infrastructures is that they're typically larger in scale than an in-house enterprise cloud, which provides clients with seamless, on-demand scalability. Public clouds are also great for testing and development, where an organization does not want to dedicate existing hardware for potentially temporary systems. Now, on the other hand, organizations looking to control their cloud presence may want to look at a private cloud architecture. The private cloud, or internal cloud, describes cloud computing without using third parties. The private cloud usually sits behind the firewall of an organization and is available to authorized users both internally and externally outside of the firewall. A great example of this would be a private cloud-based application virtualization, or desktop delivery. For example, Citrix's ZenApp delivers applications to users located anywhere on any device and access them the workloads at any time. This private cloud is controlled within a corporate data center. In this scenario, organizations would, for the most part, manage their own hardware instead of leveraging outside providers. Finally, a very popular option, a hybrid cloud is a cloud platform being adopted by many, many organizations. The biggest benefit is that systems are able to be placed in their most efficient state. Workloads that must stay local and internal can be deployed via private cloud, while the development or DR environments can still be deployed and hosted by third-party providers. Hybrid clouds combine the advantage of both public and private cloud models. In a hybrid cloud, a company can still leverage third-party cloud providers in either a full or partial manner. This increases the flexibility of computing. The hybrid cloud environment is also capable of providing on-demand, externally provisioned scalability. Augmenting a traditional private cloud with the resources of a public cloud can be used to manage any unexpected surges in workloads.
And Bill, of course, we can't let you go today without talking a little bit about virtualization. How do you see hypervisors evolving, and what impact will this have, in your opinion, on server consolidation for 2012? For example, what do you see coming in Hyper-V 3.0 or Windows 8?
I certainly see some very, very exciting things coming. The evolution of the hypervisor takes us into the conversation of unified everything. Hypervisors are being further developed to integrate DR systems, different vendors, and have more efficient storage capabilities. VMware, Citrix, and Microsoft have all come a long way with their technologies. The ability to granularly control entire workloads across the WAN becomes a necessity as more data centers enter a virtual state. The idea behind virtualization hypervisor is to make VM guests run as optimally as possible. This means making the hypervisor work better with all of the solutions that plug into it. We are seeing better integration with networking, storage, and underlying hardware components, backup systems, and much, much more. Now, we are seeing the emergence of cloud to hypervisor integration as well. Site recovery options, for example, are built directly into the hypervisor and allow administrators to replicate environments over the SAN and WAN to create fully, truly redundant virtual infrastructures. Expect all vendors to really step up their hypervisor development in 2012. Microsoft's Hyper-V 3.0 looks to include many truly enterprise features that organizations are going to enjoy working with. Some new capabilities that we've read about and tried to test out with would be simultaneous live migration of both VM and VM disks to a new location, live migration without the use of shared storage, NIC teaming without special third-party hardware, drag and drop files from one virtual machine to another, directly transferring them without having to pass them through a host or a workstation, and of course the ability to host virtual disks on file servers using SIFS, SMB, and NFS. Even with Windows Server 8, we can expect Hyper-V to make the architecture even more scalable than it ever was before. In beta tests, we have already seen some unbelievable performance. A Hyper-V host can have support up to 160 CPU cores, 2 terabytes of RAM, 4,000 virtual machines per cluster, and 63 nodes per cluster. These virtual machines will be able to support 32 vCPUs and up to 512 gigs of RAM apiece. There will also be a new virtual hard disk format called VHDX, and according to Microsoft, VHDX will be faster and be able to exceed the 2 terabyte limit, size limit of a standard VHD file. Windows Server 8 looks to bring consolidation to the OS by creating domain controllers that are virtualization-aware and embedded data deduplication support. For example, Server 8 will have the capability to dedupe files within a VHD file. So, if you have some VHD files, all with Windows Server 8 installations, the OS can be configured to dedupe identical files and save storage. This will also happen when you copy a number of files between two Windows Server 8 hosts. The networking stack will do duplication as well. 2012 really looks to expand on the concept of an intelligent infrastructure, where an environment will deploy unified architectures with a cloud presence. This will enable agile growth and the ability for IT data centers to evolve with the diverse needs of the business environment.
Well, Bill, that's just terrific information, and unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. But on behalf of Bill Clayman, I want to thank you so much for listening, and you can learn more about server virtualization and consolidation at searchdatacenter.com.